From Newbury's Corn Exchange to Crookham Common, this is Kennet Radio.
Welcome to this podcast from Kennet Radio. Lee Dillon, the freshly elected MP for Newbury, came into our studio on Thursday, the 22nd of August, and talked about a range of issues, including answering listeners' questions. Good afternoon, Lee.
Afternoon, Paul.
Congratulations on being elected.
Yeah, thank you very much.
First of all, just tell us about your own background and story, if you like.
Yeah, so I'm a local chap, born and raised here in West Berkshire, in Thatcham. Went to school in Cold Ash, St Vinian's, and then to St Bart's in Newbury, which I'm sure many of your listeners will know that school well. That's where I started to get involved in politics, actually. So on the school council, and then the Lib Dem mayor of Newbury at the time, Councillor Martha Vickers, wanted to set up a youth council, and I got involved in that, and that's where I then joined the Lib Dems, and then from there, really, I've just, you know, sort of worked my way through the political process. So being an activist and a campaigner for the Lib Dems, campaigned to get Newbury a cinema. I started that petition when I was at sixth form, and then from there became a councillor, was mayor of Thatcham twice, then I've been leader of the opposition at West Berkshire Council, leader of the council, and now the MP for Newbury.
Brilliant. So talk us through the election run-up and campaign, because it was rather odd, really, in a way, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we were all expecting a general election this side of the summer, so the far side. So we were probably expecting to be sort of ramping up our campaign in about now, but obviously the Prime Minister called a snap general election. So, you know, we had to make sure that we were getting out there on the doors straight away. But actually what we'd done in the preceding 12 months is pretty much every weekend we were out on the doors talking to residents. And that's what helped shape our literature, because we could reflect back what we'd heard from residents as their priorities. So we had a really positive campaign. I suspect many of your listeners might say they had too much literature through the door. But actually in politics, that's when we know our message is starting to be heard and got through. So thank you to all of your listeners for bearing with us, and hope they could recycle all of those leaflets that they got through the door. And then we had a big teams of canvassers going out every night. We had to get our stake board sites up to show support across the constituency growing as it did. But yeah, really enjoyable campaign. Campaigning in sort of the heat of summer is a challenger in its own right. You never know what clothes to bring out with you, and then you get obviously the summer showers catching you out as well. But the best thing about an election campaign, and particularly in a beautiful seat like Newbury, is being able to go out into all of these beautiful towns and villages and talking to locals, and that's what I really enjoy about being an elected politician, is the chance to be able to go and have conversations with people. And then that really can help shape how we can change legislation then, because we hear firsthand how things aren't working for people. And then it's our job as legislators to try to put that practical point of view into law so that law works better for all of us.
Were you surprised to be elected?
No, I wasn't surprised to be elected. The response on the doorstep throughout the campaign was positive. And actually, I think our manifesto was one of the strongest Lib Dem manifestos for a number of general elections, actually. And the way that Ed Davey, our leader, led us in this campaign was really positive. He said, you know, that politics is a serious business, the policies are serious, but actually we don't need to take ourselves too seriously. And so Ed's stunts during the campaign got us lots of airtime, so we could talk about the importance of the NHS, we could talk about how crucial fixing social care in this country is. And I think when people saw Ed as a person caring for his son, John, they realised that actually all politicians aren't the same, and that the Lib Dems have got good solutions to be able to address the problems the country are facing.
So you played tennis with him, didn't you, in Victoria Park? What was all that about?
Yeah, so that was our commitment to double nature and to create new nature parks across the country. So in Victoria Park, beautiful green space. But also about the importance of being active. If children and adults take up sport, then actually it has a long-term health benefit for them as well, which then saves the NHS money because people are leading healthier lifestyles. So that was the main cause of it. The other part of the reason why Ed came to visit is because we knew that we could win Newbury, and we wanted to show that actually we are a strong party here and that we're taking the seat seriously.
And what have you been up to for the first, 6 weeks, I think, now?
Yeah, so When so elected on the Friday morning, and then went to Parliament on the Monday after that. So we were allowed the weekend off to catch up with friends and family and some sleep. And after that, so yeah, we went to Parliament on the Monday. That's where we get given our ID badge. And then the House of Commons got a really good induction process for new members. So I was given a buddy. That was a gentleman who was actually from the Economic Research Department of the House of Commons Library. He then took me around Parliament, the building. There's 1,000 rooms in Parliament, so quite easy to get lost, particularly for a new member. And then the rest of that week was various different inductions from HR, getting your IT kit, working out where you're going to be hot desking from for the first few weeks, because we had to let the MPs who weren't successful had to have time to be able to clear their offices out. So we were hot desking for the first few weeks in a converted committee room on the upper floors of the House of Commons. So there was lots of just getting to grips with the role, getting set up, making sure that you know where you need to be, what rooms, lots of Lib Dem group meetings just to get us all coordinated at the very beginning. So then we had the state opening of Parliament, which is the big symbolic event that people will see on the TV where the King arrives in a gold coach. And that speech is the government laying out their legislative programme for this Parliament. And this is going to be one of the busiest parliaments that we've seen for a long time. There are 40 new bills that Labour hope to progress into legislation by the end of the year. So we had the King's speech, then we had the King's speech debate. And that was where I had my first chance to vote in the House of Commons. So there were two amendments tabled that gained support from the Lib Dems. There was the Lib Dem amendment itself, which spoke about the need for tackling social care, the need for removing the two-child benefit cap limit. And then the SNP, so the Scottish Nationalist Party, also put down an amendment focused around the benefit cap limit. And so we supported that as well. In the House of Commons, you don't vote by putting your hands up. You vote by walking through the aye or the no lobby. So that was a nice experience to be able to do that early on. And then we've had a number of ministerial statements as well. And I think this is a promising sign. Sometimes we've seen previous governments not pay enough attention to the House of Commons, and actually MPs get their news from Sky News or BBC or GB News or whatever channel, watching a minister making a statement in front of a camera. But actually they've been coming to the House of Commons to make their statements from the dispatch box. And that then allows us as MPs the chance to scrutinise those statements. So the Prime Minister has been at the dispatch box on quite a few occasions since before the summer recess. We've had the Chancellor come to talk about the black hole in the finances that they believe that they've seen since they've taken over. And we've had Angela Rayner, the Deputy Prime Minister, come to the dispatch box, and Wes Streeting as well. And we've also had the Home Secretary with regards to the prison placement scheme come. So busy first few weeks in Parliament there. We then got to the summer recess at the end of July. And that was really a chance to be able to get back into the constituency, to get through all of the casework, because there's lots of casework, lots of emails coming through that all need replying. So, you know, need to read them, understand what the ask is of the MP. Are they just copying you in for info? Are they just trying to lobby, or are they asking for action to be taken? And then also I've been busy interviewing as well, and interviews take up a lot of time. So we spent 5 days so far interviewing, because
interviewing staff,
yeah, to build up the support team that will deliver the change that we want to see here in Newbury.
Maiden speech, how does that work?
So the maiden speech has a tradition. So it should acknowledge the efforts of the previous MP, and then it should also, in effect, sell the constituency, a little bit like a tourist information board type speech. And then you should also have some regard to the debate in which you've stood up to talk in. So if, for example, you were making your speech during the railways bill, then you should be acknowledging that subject matter in the speech as well. There are a couple of nice conventions, though. So fellow members of the chamber aren't meant to heckle you during your maiden speech. So that gives you a chance to stand up with some confidence that you're not going to get shouted down. And then you arrange via your whip's office. So they're the people who, the party managers, who help us to formulate which way we're going to vote on a particular issue. And then with the speaker's office as well, you give them the heads up that you're intending to make your maiden speech. And often you'll have family in the chamber, in the public galleries watching that. So the speaker will try to coordinate that so that they don't have to sit around too long. And particularly in my case, having three young children, I don't think they'd be that happy sitting through 10 hours of debate just to hear their dad speak.
So when is your maiden speech? You're in a queue?
No, it's not a queue. You can just request to do the maiden speech. Obviously, with half of this parliament being new MPs, there are a record number of maiden speeches to be made. I'm actually intending to make my maiden speech before the conference recess, which is on the 12th of September. So hopefully the second week of September, I'll be able to address the House. I'm just waiting for the programme of business for that week to be publicised on the website so I can see what's the most relevant debate for me to be able to speak in.
Got some questions from social media. First of all, Tabitha asks, what is your top priority for the area as MP?
So I've got more than one priority, but you said top priority, and I think actually it's about NHS and social care. Here in West Berkshire, we're serviced by three hospitals. We've got Great Western in Swindon, we've got North Hants in Basingstoke, and we've got the Royal Barks, obviously, in Reading. But we've heard from the Secretary of State for Health that the new hospitals programme is being reviewed. What we need to do is understand from the Secretary of State what is the remit of that review. Is it what money's available? Is it what order those hospitals are built in? Are any of those hospitals going to be built? So I've already met with the Chief Executive and his senior leadership team up at the hospital in Reading. But also in the meantime, while that decision and that review is being taken, is what can we do for West Berkshire Community Hospital? What extra diagnostic equipment can we get in there so that local residents don't have to travel so far to have their initial scans and tests done? They may have to go to the main hospitals to have their treatment done, but actually that local provision of care. So that's my top focus, and also linking that with NHS dentists in the area. The data clearly shows that the amount of residents per dentist is increasing year on year in Berkshire. And we're actually, even within our operating area, so there's something called BOB, which is the Berkshire, Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire Trust. And if you look in Oxfordshire, it's something like 1,400 people per dentist. Here in Berkshire, it's 1,800. Yet we're under the same sort of governance arrangements. So, and that links in actually to my other priorities, which are the issue with Thames Water and our chalk streams here in West Berkshire needing that protection because of how fragile that ecosystem is within the streams. But then also about the funding settlement the local councils get. A lot of the casework I get is actually relating to services provided by West Berkshire Council. And as your listeners will know, I'm sure, there's a real funding issue for local councils across the country. At the moment, they only get yearly settlements. The Labour government, and I welcome this, have said that they will start doing three-year funding settlements. But so not only do you need the longer settlements, but you also need the right settlement value in there. And linking that just back to the NHS, there's something called the Continuing Healthcare Fund. And again, West Berkshire gets a smaller proportion of that than what it should do. So again, I'll be linking up with the Integrated Care Board to try to fight to make sure that West Berkshire gets its fair share across the piece.
Going back to hospitals, Royal Barks, I think part of the... Well, obviously now the question is, will they actually have a new hospital at all? But secondly, it could end up in eastern Reading, which will put it slightly beyond most people getting to it by train or whatever.
So I'm not too concerned about the exact location, whether it's a mile further away from West Berkshire. For me, is it easier to get to? And Royal Berks isn't an easy place to get to at the moment. The train station is nowhere near. You know, you'd have to walk all the way through town. To drive to it is hard. To park is near impossible. And actually, I think the case for should there be a hospital, I think that's already been answered. I think the presentations that the senior management put forward to get onto the new hospitals programme, that evidence is as relevant now as it ever was. And actually their annual bill for maintaining the current site is just increasing. So it's good money after bad. So there really does need to be a new hospital, and it needs to be a new hospital that's designed for how healthcare is delivered now, not how it was originally delivered in the 1800s. And then they've done piecemeal development of the hospital ever since. So there are simply the wrong facilities in the wrong locations at the hospital. So patients are having to be moved further around the hospital to get to the X-ray machine and then back to the ward, for example. They talk about healthcare 2.0, and that's the new model for designing hospitals. And that's absolutely what residents in Berkshire should be aspiring to have.
It's held together by funny porter cabin, sort of portable or temporary corridors, really, isn't it? The Royal Berkshire Hospital. You've got to walk a mile along a funny old corridor.
You do. And if you know, when you drive around the outside of it as well, you can see these MRI screening units that they've built on the site as well. It simply isn't fit for purpose anymore as a building. The healthcare that's provided by the doctors and the nurses is excellent, of course. But yeah, it's just the evidence is there that it needs to be a new hospital. Our only concern is obviously there are hospitals that have rack in them as well. And that concrete needs to be
the problem out with the breeze blocks.
Yes. Yeah. So there is, so I think Frimley Park has that, and that's part of the Berkshire NHS Foundation Trust. So that hospital, from a health and safety point of view, will need vast sums spent on it. And obviously that is an immediate health and safety issue. So what we need to say to the government really is take the RAC hospitals as a separate program, and that shouldn't divert funds away from the new hospital program.
And Frimley is, it's newer than Royal Berks, isn't it? I think it's 1970s.
And that's the problem. That's why it's got RAC. That's actually why we're fortunate here in Newbury that none of our schools have got RAC, because all the schools are long-term standing schools, not built in the 70s.
Right, we've got two people who asked, Matt from Newbury and Sam on Facebook. What are you doing regarding building a bridge across Thatcham Level Crossing?
So it was in the Lib Dem Council manifesto in May 23 to support the principle of a bridge over the level crossing, or over the railway, should I say. I think the location for the bridge is still to be determined. My personal preference would be to build it in Coalthorpe and bring it over the railway line there, simply because you're not then next to residential houses. And in order to get a bridge that can go over the electrification of the line, it's going to be an extremely high bridge. And it's going to have a long ramp leading up to it. So the Swan Public House, for example, will probably be underneath the bridge. And then there are houses immediately around the Swan Pub as well. So I'd preference somewhere slightly further down the line in Coalthorpe, where I think we've got more land. So you could zigzag the bridge over it, and so you could reduce the overall height of the construction. But where we are actually at the moment is, so Laura Farris, my predecessor, had written to the Department of Transport. And what Laura was asking was, could you give us a high-level steer to tell us if you think that this could be a goer? Because what we need to do is we need to do a feasibility study on the location. And that's going to cost about £300,000 to do a feasibility study. And West Berkshire Council would be asked to contribute to that as well. I said in the previous answer about West Berkshire's funding issues at the moment. So we really need to make sure that if we're going to go and spend this £300k on a feasibility, that it's got some support at the Department of Transport. So I'm just waiting now to hear back as the new MP from the DFT as to whether they support the principle of it.
Alex on Facebook, I'd be interested to know what you plan to do to improve road safety on the Newbury bypass A34 with so many serious and fatal accidents occurring on this section.
Yeah, and sadly we had an accident there recently at the end of July involving two military vehicles where both gentlemen were seriously injured. So, look, I mean, I'm happy to sit down with the Highways Agency, with the police, with West Berkshire Highways, to look at what design mechanisms could we do to make it safer. Having used that section of the A34 before, I think some of those slip roads are particularly short and have got some quite sweeping, steep bends in them as well. And then, of course, working with the police around traffic enforcement as well. You know, often accidents happen because of the speed of vehicles travelling at or because of careless driving. So more education for drivers on that too.
Trev from Hungerford, Kaz from Hungerford and Carper on Facebook asked about what expectation they should have for response times for emails sent to you.
Yeah, thank you. And that's a great question, because actually, in all honesty, Paul, we're being inundated with emails at the moment, which is great. I want residents to tell me what their concerns are. But as the MP, I need to give each of those letters, you know, serious consideration and then draft a response to them. So what I've been doing at the moment, because I don't have a staff team in place yet, they're all going through security clearance, getting their IT equipment, etc. So once I'm fully staffed, I would expect them to have an initial response within 10 working days. And in most cases, a clear plot of action of what we've done. You know, so we've referred it to this agency or to this council department, etc. And then we would respond back once we get the answer back on behalf of the constituent. What I'm having to do at the moment, as I said, because of the staffing situation and the volume coming in and the handover, is triage those emails. So this morning I was on the phone to the Home Office about two different type of visa applications. One was so a student could get their student finance, and the other one was about a Newbury resident who has got an upcoming wedding, and their family haven't been given a visa to come and visit for their wedding. So jumping on those urgent ones, jumping on the housing ones, the council services ones, and the emails that relate to policy. So Lee, what's your view on assisted dying? Lee, what's your view on the winter fuel allowance? Those ones are at the bottom of the pile at the moment, simply because, one, my answer doesn't change anything here and now. And there are no immediate parliamentary votes or debates happening on those policy areas. But everyone will get a response. And as I said, once we're fully up and running, I think 10 working days, and hopefully getting underneath that. And actually what we will do is we'll commit to publishing our response rates as well on my website. Oh, so people brilliant. Will be able to see if we're doing what I say we're going to do.
I think people forget that a new MP, you don't have an office or anything at first. You're just stood in a corridor with a mobile phone.
Yes, yeah. And it's your mobile phone. The House of Commons don't provide you with one. So, yeah, I mean, as a new MP, so I've had to source my own constituency office here. And actually, I'm really grateful that Laura Farris was kind enough to offer me her previous office. That was good sense in terms of saving time, finding a location. Residents already know where the constituency office is in Newbury, and if they don't, it's in Park Street off Northbrook Street. Plus it already has all the security arrangements in place, so it saves the taxpayer money, because they would have had to have ripped all of that out and then supplied new stuff wherever I'd taken up a new location. But that all needs sorting out. I then have to do all of the forms to submit them to Parliament for them to approve the building. And then when we're hiring staff, I have to write all of the job adverts, the job descriptions, post them online myself, obviously schedule all of the interviews. And then when they start, I have to issue the contracts, I have to set them up on the payroll system. So it's not like you have the House of Commons staff there for advice, but they don't do the do. And so, yeah, lots of admin to get over in the first few weeks of being a new member.
And that's going to be your permanent office there in Park Street, is it?
Yeah, so that's my constituency office there. Yeah, and I've now been allocated my parliamentary office up in Westminster as well.
That's very generous of Laura Farris, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and what's great actually about the office is it's rented from Greenham Common Trust. So actually that rent is going straight back into local good causes here in West Berkshire too.
Andy on Facebook asks a couple of questions. First of all, why are we giving foreign aid to some countries that are richer than some parts of the UK, then removing the winter fuel allowance for many pensioners?
Yeah, so I think they're separate subjects, to be honest with you. For me, international development is about our moral place in the world. If you look at the UN sustainability goals, they are not on target to be met. And that includes in countries like India. And I think maybe your questioner, I think it was Andrew, you know, they have a bigger budget than Great Britain, but they're spending their money differently as well. And actually, I think that international development money gets us influence in those countries. And as I said, it's just morally the right thing to do. And it makes us more secure as well. If you think that if a country is functioning, then there's less chance of a civil war, which then means there's less chance of more migrants having to, you know, leave those countries as well. And sorry, and in terms of the winter fuel side of it. Yeah. So, you know, we've got concerns that, you know, pensioners who are eligible for pension credit don't claim it. And if any of your listeners think that they are eligible for pension credit, then they absolutely should go and put a claim in. If you get pension credit, it's worth over £3,000 a year to you, whereas the winter fuel payment was £300 a year. So, you know, people would be better off there. For me, I've got a concern around the current threshold that Rachel Reeves has proposed, and also the manner of the announcement. There was no public consultation done on this. It was said at the end of summer, and it's coming in for this winter. So, you know, pensioners will feel hit hard early on. And I don't think that's right. I think they could have given longer for people to adjust to it. However, saying that, there are also pensioners who are extremely wealthy or wealthy enough. So my own father did get the winter fuel allowance, but he had no need for it. But you couldn't say to the government, no, I don't want it. And I know of pensioners here in West Berkshire who actually donate that £300 to charity every year. So again, that money isn't doing what the government intended it to do. But there are also lots of other ways in which we can take action to end fuel poverty. So under the Lib Dems, we wanted to launch an emergency home energy upgrade program. So that's providing free insulation, heat pumps for low-income households, and those pensioners would probably be in that category. So we can reduce their fuel bills in other ways. You know, we can introduce a social tariff for the most vulnerable provided so that they get energy discounts. And then we can also make sure we help people with the cost of living by implementing proper one-off windfall taxes on those super profits from those oil and gas providers. So I think there are other ways which saves the householder money, but also helps save the planet. I think what the Labour government have proposed is about them saving some money, you know, at the cost to pensioners, and actually doesn't address the real issue, which is about reducing the inefficiency of our houses and making energy cheaper at the front door.
Another question on Instagram, Sharon asks, how will you address rural crime that is impacting communities and businesses?
So, I mean, well, rural crime, obviously, Newbury constituency's got a big rural area. You know, if you go to the Downlands, Lambourne, Cold Ash and Cheveley wards and Hungerford as well. And then you've got the villages, obviously, there of Inkpen, etc. But the Police and Crime Commissioner, actually, Matthew Barber, has released his new crime and policing plan that runs up to 2029. And within that, there is actually a focus on rural crime. And I don't know if your listeners will be aware, but actually recently the Rural Crime Task Group that's been set up in Thames Valley has actually doubled the amount of officers now. So it had 10, it now has 20 officers. And the problem with rural crime is it needs to be really intelligence led, because you can't just constantly do patrols of hundreds and hundreds of miles of country lanes. So it's about working better with the machine manufacturers. So building more security into those devices, trackers, etc. So it makes it harder for people to steal the machinery. And if they do steal it, it's easier for us to recover it quicker. And then obviously working through the criminal justice system to make sure there are tougher penalties in place, because not only do these rural crimes happen in isolated areas, which can make people feel more vulnerable, they can also push up food cost productions, you know, or even ruin food production if an important piece of machinery was taken out at the wrong part of a growing season. I mean, we're in harvest season now. You know, it wouldn't take much for a combine harvester to be stolen to ruin then the crop for that year. So I think it's about doing that predominantly, to be honest with you, and working through the police's rural task group, and that has my full support. As I said, it's doubled now to 20 officers with two sergeants above them, and I'd like to make sure that the metrics, which are a reduction in rural crime, are met, and if they're not met, then as the MP I would be calling for more resources to be put back in there as well.
Brendan on Facebook says, there's lots of talk about building more houses. What plans are being made to improve the infrastructure, as everything feels like it's already struggling?
Yeah, and I'd agree with Brendan. It does feel like that. And actually, that's the concern of the administration at West Berkshire Council over the current local plan that's going through examination at the moment. The infrastructure delivery plan for the 1,500 homes, potentially up to 2,500 homes in North Thatcham, didn't have one penny of infrastructure funding allocated to it, and was part of the reason why the council didn't want to progress the current local plan, but were forced to, you know, by the government. They said they weren't able to withdraw it. The need for infrastructure is quite clear. You know, for X amount of dwellings, you need X amount of school places, X amount of foot space for a library, doctor's surgeries, etc. But what we find is lots of developers shirking their responsibility to provide that. And I think that actually goes right back to the core business model of providing housing, and that goes to the land value. In this country, we have something that's called hope value. So you could have a low-grade agricultural field, say it's worth £20,000. They then get planning permission to build 500 homes on it. The land value increases to 5 million. The land hasn't done anything different at all. It's just been given a different status. So actually, if we get that hope value out of it, then that would mean developments would be cheaper. So that 5 million that they've saved from buying the land could then be put into infrastructure delivery. And it's not just about providing the infrastructure, it's about providing it at the right stage of development as well. I worked for a social housing provider before I was a member of parliament, and I've worked on new build estates where we've tried to get the developer to build the community centre first. But often what they want to do is have 100 homes occupied so that they made those sales, then they build the community centre. But if you think those 100 families are now living on that estate for 2 or 3 years without any community facilities, and it's just wrong. And actually what it means is you get less sustainable communities going forward because they haven't got that shared space to have those shared experiences. So, yeah, so for me, it's the fundamental business case of development, so the hope value in the land, and then it's about getting sure that you're phasing the infrastructure in at the right points as the development's being built, not just waiting all till the end.
Charlie from Leck Hampstead, question for Lee regarding highways. When the M4 closes due to an incident, Cheveley to Hungerford, a lot of traffic is routed through country lanes by Google Maps, Waze, etc., rather than the A4. These roads aren't designed for that volume of traffic, thousands of cars using these routes. It happens quite frequently. What can be done to stop this, or request central government support in fixing the many, many potholes in country lanes?
So here in West Berkshire, we've got more country lanes than most local councils have got. And actually, the majority of our road network is country lanes. So that need for funding out there is absolutely evident. And to be honest with you, with the lack of street lighting out in rural areas, those potholes are even more dangerous than they would be in a built up area where you've got a bit of street light so you could see them. In terms of the funding for that, the previous government did give a cash boost to councils. I think it goes back to my argument earlier about longer term funding settlements for councils and the right level of funding. If they know that they've got a 3-year funding settlement, how they choose to spend their money can be done in a much more strategic way. But also West Berkshire Council, I know, are looking at adopting more modern technology. So using AI, where a machine will drive over the road, scan it, and it will be able to tell if a pothole is going to develop. So again, getting there in the preventative stage, which is a lot cheaper and a lot less disruptive for drivers. So I think technology will help partly with that. And then in terms of Charlie's question about diversions, I've experienced that myself, seeing the villages snarl up when the M4 is shut, and also seeing Newbury and Thatcham come to a halt on the A4 as well. That's about working with those technology companies to make sure that they're doing proper routing. It happens in the HGV world. You know, they have clear sat navs that tell them they can't use certain lanes with weight restrictions on, for example. And I mean, it's about working with those technology companies to try and tackle that issue. And I'm happy to write to the minister to see what plans the Department of Transport have got to make that happen.
Great. Paul in Thatcham said he's very pleased to see football back at Faraday Road, and he hears you're a football fan. Who is your favourite football team?
Well, Paul, my majority is only 2,300 odd, so I don't want to lose that many votes with one answer. But I'm a Man U fan, actually. My stepfather's family's from up north. There's a link there of why I support United. But also, a couple of seasons ago, I was a season ticket holder at Reading, where I took my two young sons. So one of them's a Man U fan, one of them's a Reading fan. And then my daughter is making her mind up at the moment. She's got a Reading top and a Man U top, and she flips between the two of them. But I'm delighted that Paul's happy that football's back at Faraday Road. That was a travesty that it was taken away from there. And I'm really pleased to see that Newbury men's team will be playing there from this season. And I hope to get along as well to watch some games there myself.
Some big issues, but short answers. What's your position on abortion?
I'm comfortable with the current legislation as it stands.
Assisted dying?
I think that we should allow people to end their life with certain protections. I don't think it's for the government to be able to say no. I'm a liberal at the end of the day, and I think it's your body and you have that right. What we just need to make sure is obviously there are safeguards in place that people don't feel they're being coerced into taking such a dramatic and final step.
Votes for 16 and 17 year olds.
Yeah, I'd happily endorse that. Some of the best questions that I've had on the campaign trail have come from really informed students. And actually, the earlier you get people to take part in the democratic process, the more likely they are to carry on voting in adulthood.
Should we rejoin the EU?
We should look to have closer ties with the EU. Joining the EU would depend on what the deal on offer from the EU was.
Should we recognise Palestine as a state now?
Yes.
Should we let Ukraine use our armaments in Russia?
Yes. If we've supplied the weapons to them, then they should be a responsible partner. They should be using them in Russia, but in a defensive capability rather than an offensive capability.
Right.
They should be able to use them in there, yeah.
Okay. I understand you're a Frank Sinatra fan. What do you like about him?
So, I'm not a massive music fan, but the music I like to be able to hear the lyrics to a song. And Frank Sinatra, you know, when he sings them, they're easy to sing along to. There's some great variation in them as well. And they stood the test of time, those songs. But yeah, I mean, you were playing Ed Sheeran earlier on in the break, and I was singing along to that because, again, it's a singer who you can quite clearly hear what the lyrics are. But there are also, you know, Eminem. Actually, he's a rapper where you can really hear what you're saying. So again, I like that type of music as well. I just like to be able to really hear the lyrics of a song.
That's very broad taste you've got.
It is quite, yes, yeah.
Thanks ever so much, Lee.
Thanks for having us, Paul.
All the very best.
Thanks.
That was Lee Dillon, MP for Newbury, talking in the Kennet Radio Studios live on air on the 22nd of August, 2024. Thank you for listening to this Kennet Radio podcast. Don't forget you can listen to us 24 hours a day on 106.7 FM, also online and on our mobile.
106.7 Kennet Radio.